This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to New Books in History, a channel on the New Books Network. I'm Yana Byers, your host, and I'm here today with Paul Nellis, Associate Professor of History at Carleton University in Canada, and Rosa Salzberg, Associate Professor of Sociology and Social Research at the University of Trento in Italy. And we're here today to talk about their new edited volume, Connected Mobilities in the Early Modern World, The Practice and Experience of Movement, out this year, 2022, with the University of Amsterdam Press. Hello, Paul. Hello, Rosa. How are you this morning?
Yeah, good morning. Good morning.
Great. Rosa, how are you doing?
I'm fine, thanks, Yana. I should say, actually, though, I'm an associate professor of early modern history in the Department of Sociology and Social Research. I'm an imposter in the sociology department, but that's very stimulating too.
I can imagine. Yeah, I wondered where I didn't know you to be a sociologist. I wondered when that happened, but I was, you know, no criticism. Sociology is a field.
No, it's a recent move, actually. I've been there for about the last year. It's terrific, and it's a great university and a great department. It is quite different, and I have to say, you know, things that we might talk about today, that, you know, my interest in things like mobility and migration has allowed me, I think, to have dialogue with sociologists that's quite fruitful and interesting. But I know I remain an early modern historian for sure.
That's good news. All right, that's good news. I'm happy to hear it. It, you know, I speak with a bit of bias, but history is the queen of the disciplines. Definitely want to keep you in the fold. So, Rosa, you are in Trento this morning, yeah? Or this afternoon for you and me.
That's right. Yeah, in northern Italy, yeah.
And Paul, you're enjoying a nice chilly Canadian morning?
Yes, it's actually fairly mild here. It's just hovering above zero, so... Could be worse. Yeah.
Could be worse. Sure. Yeah. All right. So I'm looking at the way you two describe your work, right? So Rosa, you talk about mobility, urban history, migration, but also print, right? And you have a history with the interest of the, you know, you have an interest, a history of interest in the history of print. And Paul, you as well describe yourself as you're an early modern person who is, I think it is the intellectual culture of the Renaissance, right? And you have an interest in print. So I think I understand how you two got together to write this book and how you came to know each other. But let me know if I'm right. Tell our listeners how this book happened.
As I remember it, we sort of we were both sort of outcasts or outliers at a communication studies conference in Venice, and in, I think, Rosa, you were giving introductory or closing remarks, and you mentioned mobility, and we picked each other up after that, and just realized we had an interest in mobility, coming from very different perspectives, actually, and decided to pursue it through some conferences and meetings and so on. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's not an accident, actually, because I think, as Paul said, we did meet at this communications history conference in Venice. And so we both come out of backgrounds more in the history of communication and print and, you know, libraries and reading and those kind of interests. And yet I think that it actually led both of us in some ways, correct me if I'm wrong, Paul, but to think about the connections between the movement of people and the movement of books and ideas. And I was also increasingly moving in that direction in my research. So I think we felt that there was a lot more to say about those kind of connections. And that's one of the things that sort of led us to first organizing some panels at the Renaissance Society of America conference in 2017, and then another conference in Florence, where I was a fellow for a couple of years at the European University Institute, that allowed us to sort of bring together some what we saw as really cutting edge research on these topics.
Great. So conferences and much communication and just the, like an abiding interest in this as well in an ongoing discussion. So what was the historiographical hole you felt you needed to fill?
I think in particular what we really felt like was a kind of need to explore more about the practical aspects and the experience of mobility, of moving around, whether that was on a smaller scale or on in terms of long distance migration in the early modern period. So really thinking about the kind of places and spaces that shaped mobility, whether that was inns or roads or city gates, quarantine stations, all of those kind of places. The people, so not just the people who are actually moving, but also the people who kind of facilitated or blocked movement in some way, again, gatekeepers or innkeepers or, you know, ship captains, I mean, lots of different people, and also the materiality of moving, so its impact on the body, the kind of things that people carry with them, the impact of, you know, weather and of bad conditions on the road and physical danger and all of these kind of things. So I think, like, we felt that there was, you know, there's a lot of great work obviously on migration and on travel, but sort of really in some cases lacking some of that gritty detail that really allows us to understand more about what it really might have meant to move in that period and felt like to move.
Yeah, and in the book we talk about the everyday mechanics of mobility, and it's filling in those, looking closely at those spaces, the practices, processes through which people are moving around, and just, you know, in terms of, you know, backing up a little bit in terms of the field and historiography and where, you know, the sort of conceptual frameworks around mobility are really coming out of sociology and particularly social geographers, for whom mobility is primarily, they're really looking at urban mobility, migration, looking at that small scale and very localized forms of mobility. There's great work done on, you know, waiting and ferry terminals and this sort of thing, airports. Whereas in the early modern field, its mobility tends to be used as a cipher for distance, with the sort of in-betweenness, the spaces or the meshwork, another term we use in the book, all of the fabric, the microfibers that keep movement together are left out. And so we're left with this picture of, oh, so-and-so is in Lisbon, and then all of a sudden they're in Goa. And, you know, what happened in between, and how did it, what was the paperwork? What were the conditions on ship? What were the institutional structures that allowed all of this to happen? And those are localized. So that's where we're coming from.
Yeah, there's a lot there. This book sits at the intersection of a lot of different kind of ideas, and it's people moving and like the people who move them, the things they're moving, the ways they're moving. There's kind of things you don't tend to think about. When you think about travel, you think about how great it's going to be when you get there, not the micro frustrations of getting yourself from place to place. And this book really deals with a lot of that. And lovely, well done. And some very good, really good, some very good articles put together with some great scholars. So you've got this organized in moving bodies, crossing borders, global networks. How did you choose that framework?
It really speaks to the, you know, one of the major points we hope to get across with the book, hope to, you know, tools for people to think with, is the interconnectedness of different forms of mobility. Mm-hmm. So localized urban mobility, but down to the body. And, you know, there's all of this literature on etiquette and dueling and dancing and acrobatics and so on in the early modern period, which is really concerned with the micro movements of the body and the control of the body. And there's a literature on that. But so we're trying to, you know, explore some of the, you know, what are the relationships? We see this increased emphasis on the control of movement from the body all the way to urban mobility, to borders and across borders, across empires in this period. And so it's really to try to tease out that and locate that interconnectedness and see where those spaces of interconnectedness are. So we have the, you know, localized embodied mobility, the sort of more urban and and regional mobilities, and then the long distance mobility.
Wonderful. So how about next, if you tell me what is the thrust of the piece you did together? You do the introduction for the volume together. And tell me a little bit how it was to work together from across an ocean.
I think as Paul was saying too, he was alluding to this literature also that comes out of particularly the social sciences, on which is known as the new mobilities paradigm or the mobilities turn. It's got various names. So I think one of our, and that's a body of work that I think has inspired both of us, that we found very stimulating, and I think to one degree or another inspired quite a few of the authors in the volume. So one of the ideas I think behind the introduction was just to sort of to explain that a little bit, obviously, to readers, and to explain how that's influencing some kind of researchers in early modern history and how we think it can be a fruitful way of approaching the past as well as the contemporary world. But also, as Paul was saying about the organization of the book, just to kind of really try and tease out these why we need to think about mobility on these different scales, from the body up to the global, and what the sort of interconnections are between these different levels, I think. So they were my driving, I think, ideas. Do you want to add something to that, Paul?
Yeah, I would just go back to our own sort of career trajectories as well, whereas Rose is, you know, characterize you as a sort of card-carrying social historian, and I'm a card-carrying sort of cultural historian. And so it was very complementary in a way, and Rose is familiar with literatures that I really don't know and wouldn't be able to, you know, to get into that and with that sort of detail. A friend of mine who has a twin described their childhood. He said, "Well, when you have a twin, you're completely without fear, right? So because you look over your twin and say, 'Let's do it, let's do it,' and you sort of move towards the precipice." And this is one of the most fantastic collaborative endeavors I've been involved with, and that was what I felt was, like, you know, sort of we had license to go a little bit beyond our normal comfort level, at least for me, having this sort of safety net of a collaborator.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, likewise, because Paul has in recent years worked more on the global history of the Jesuits and their kind of networks of mobility and information and things. That really helped me, who I focus mostly on Italy and on Europe in my research, to sort of start again, put some of those literatures together and to feel like someone else had those bases more covered than I did. So that the book still has a European focus, but was able to actually, by the time we got the full range of of contributors together also have a pretty good global coverage, I think, which was something that I think we were really pleased about. And then, I mean, as we've said, this has evolved over how many, 5 years or something, I think, since the initial conversations and conferences. And then just thanks to be able to, you know, periodically get together for a conference. So we had a little sort of seminar workshop in Venice a couple of years ago, again, to just keep the ideas flowing. And then, you know, the power of Zoom and FaceTime, even before the pandemic, has allowed it to be, a pretty, I think, pretty seamless working relationship, you know, aside from the usual delays and things that come with editing a book.
Sure. Like, yeah, the postponements, delays, time zones. You know, it's funny, we don't tend to work together as much. Many other disciplines work together. They collaborate from the beginning in all of their work. And we don't seem to value that much in history, but it's really nice. The times you've been able to work with someone else, your work is better than it would be. And you do work that's better than the sum of your parts because you have someone there to talk to, bounce ideas about. It's wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, and I think anytime we do work with someone else, we always say, you know, we've got to do more of this. And then we go back into our libraries and that's
back into the silo. Yeah.
back to you and your documents. You brought up there in that answer another point that I think is very interesting about this book is the final section, Global Networks. You have this has a really broad focus. I mean, Paul, your piece on the Jesuits and then Sabu Aslanian's work as well. Right. And Felicitas Tramontana's The Franciscan Journeys allow us for this very kind of broad focus of multinational organizations. And it's a cool idea. I like the juxtaposition, right, of these little ideas and these huge organizations working together. How did that happen?
Serendipity. It was, as Rose has mentioned, I've been working on the Jesuits and their sort of communication, culture of communication over the last decade, I guess, really moving away from earlier stuff on libraries and print. And, you know, I'm just speaking for myself, but, you know, because I'm looking at a global religious organization, and always sort of in the back of my mind, there's always a sort of apology that I'm not working on the, you know, Dutch East India Company or something like that. So I think it's really cool that these last three global chapters are all on global religious cultures, Franciscans, Jesuits, and then this great story of the Armenian alms collectors told by Sabu Aslanian in the final chapter. And you know, we all three chapters make the point that yes, we're piggybacking on on commercial operations, commercial networks of transportation and infrastructure, and so on. But you know, one of the points we make in the introduction is that merchants weren't the only people that traveled along these networks, and they were actually in the minority in many cases. That you know, sailors, soldiers, and missionaries and religious, you know, clergy of all kinds, you know, servicing people on the ships and so on, in many cases outnumbered the actual merchants in moving around. Rosa, do you have another?
Yeah, no, I think the other thing I was thinking of when you were saying that too is the way that including those essays allowed us also to bring through something that we were referring to at the beginning, which is that the importance of putting together the global and the local. So, and I think it is something it's a conversation that's happening a lot in global history at the moment as well, is the need to, you know, the importance of looking at the global, but also the importance of understanding how that relates to local contexts and circumstances. And that's something that I think those final three chapters really allow us to see, because on the one hand we're talking about massive scales of movement, and in some cases people really, as you say, going Lisbon, Goa, you know, really all over the place in a relatively short time. But on the other hand, understanding something about the local cultures and infrastructures of mobility puts those things in a new light that's very, very valuable as well.
Mm-hmm. It also allows for the juxtaposition of kind of the material culture and the culture writ large as well, that you, it's a nice way to once again demonstrate that you're talking about a lot of different levels of movement here. Yeah. Very nice. And this is just a bit on the process of editing a volume. Most of our listeners will never have done it and should never do it. but tell our listeners a little bit about how you go about editing a volume. So you got together, you're like, hey, this is a cool idea. Let's do this volume. And then the magic happened, and now there's a volume.
Well, I mean, in my case, this is actually the first volume that I've edited. I've co-edited some special issues of journals, which are probably a little bit simpler in some ways. But Paul has more experience than I do. But I have to say, you know, as we've said, it's sort of something that evolved quite organically over a number of years in terms of kind of finding a group of authors who we felt were really reflecting the kind of ideas and approaches that we were really interested in. In many cases, they're quite young scholars, you know, and they're sort of quite really fresh research, and testing them out at seminars and conferences and things so that we could discuss our ideas together. I think it has, you know, probably all been slowed down by the pandemic, as so many academic endeavors have been, and just obviously the inability to get together, and also just the complications that it's created for people's lives. But I think one thing that's worth mentioning, though, is that actually that for me, in some ways, if we think about the way that the ideas in the book have gestated over these 5 years, in some ways that added a very valuable aspect that I think, you know, when you're thinking about a topic like mobility, particularly about global mobility, you know, the way that I think the pandemic made so many of us think differently about our assumptions about freedom to move, you know, and then all of a sudden not having what it means when you don't have that freedom, or when it becomes much more difficult to move, or even just the links between disease and mobility, which are really important, and they're there in the book as well. So we have a wonderful chapter by Darko Bilic, which is about this establishment of the quarantine system throughout the Adriatic and the building of lazaretti, or these quarantine hospitals. And, you know, literally during the course of editing the book, that it just became more and more evident how relevant and topical that chapter was. But I think in so many ways, it just made all of us think, you know, a little bit more about the connections between mobility and also sort of immobility or friction, and, you know, the times when things stop and connections break, or also the people who, you know, in every age, but certainly in the early modern period, didn't have the right to move or couldn't afford to move in comfort, or were forced to move, you know, in the case of people who were persecuted or slaves, for example. Paul, do you want to add something to that about the process of editing the book?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely, you know, there was that initial period of, some conference panels. That's 2 day. Was it a 2 day session in Florence that you organized, Rosa? And then sort of sitting back and, you know, finding out, well, who was available, who hadn't already committed their stuff elsewhere. And then, you know, how would the different, you know, because we had a lot of different people that we were hearing from, and how would that all fit together? And then, yeah, there was some, you know, back and forth, and then the pandemic hit, and, you know, everything sort of slowed down. I would say in the final stage, when we were finally moving to getting a manuscript to press, went incredibly smoothly. It was the authors were fantastic to work with. Everyone was on time. I was astonished, because we've got nine chapters. Well, you know, one of them's mine, plus the introduction. So it's a lot of people, and everyone was just so, you know, collegial through the whole process. So, and I should say the Amsterdam University Press was fabulous to work with. I mean, just from, it was like clockwork, moving from one, you know, desk to the other, right through, you know, we at the end of August, we were said, here's the schedule. It's going to be printed in December. And that's what happened. It, you know, through two rounds of copy editing, the index, The final stage was when Rose and I did the index. And this is, I was explaining this to my students the other day, or talking about this with my students. I said, you know, how many people have used the book index? And they all put up their hand and say, isn't it useful? And they're like, oh, yeah, yeah. Who do you think, you know, wrote the index, drew up the index? And they're like, oh, I don't know. And I was like, well, the author, most likely. And I said, that's how I spent my reading week, because, you know, compiling an index for a book. Yeah. So, but that's when you know you're saying goodbye, by the time you're doing the index. So it was, and it was oddly, I don't know, I have more, I'm not a crossword puzzle person, but I found the index vaguely, you know, compelling to do. It was interesting to think through the book again.
Yeah, it was amazing. Yeah. It kind of brought up new conversations actually about how you categorize key ideas that come out of the book. So it kind of brought us back to some of the original conversations that we had, literally just trying to work out how to kind of put mobility and or migration and or, you know, some of these terms into the index.
Yeah, if only there were index elves, but there are not.
So I guess that's our advice to potential readers, is start with the index.
Yeah, keep that in mind while you're writing. I mean, It's just, there's so many conceptual issues that you're not thinking about until you do an index either. Like, what is this? What's my category? What does this even mean? It's a very interesting process. So it's this is, listeners, a very interesting and wide-ranging book. You have you have scholars from all over the globe, which is really nice. And a lot of different ideas, and I'm sure it was hard to say goodbye to, but also, of course, the wonderful reward of a job well done. So, what's next for both of you, Rosa? What are you working on right now?
I've been working for the last couple of years on Venice, on the history of Venice as a center of migration and mobility in the early modern period, and that's actually something that's, you know, personally for me, the process of editing this book has been incredibly valuable for allowing me to sort of help put that very focused sort of close range research in a broader context. So I've been working on spaces like inns and lodging houses in Venice and how this kind of infrastructure of commercial hospitality helped to manage and to kind of impact the experience of migration and mobility in the city at that time. And so that will hopefully be another book at some point. I'm just about to send off a very short book on called The Renaissance on the Road, which is about Renaissance mobility. So really, in some ways, trying to encapsulate some of the ideas that we've also put into this collective volume, and that's coming out with the Cambridge Elements series in hopefully early in the new year. So yeah, it's been personally sort of tacking between the very focused individual research and this collective bigger, broader conversation has been very stimulating and has really helped me, I think, to advance my individual work as well.
Wonderful. All right, Paul, how about you? What's next?
Well, I'm completing a book on Jesuit communication and global communication in the 16th century. So that's looking at both at the Roman end and the sort of movement, the paper generation of paperwork and the papal curia, but then also the sort of global information culture of the Jesuits in the second half of the 16th century. And that's framed around a sort of micro history of the first permanent secretary of the Society of Jesus, who's this very personable, often very sort of off the cuff, amusing Spanish Jesuit, Juan Alfonso de Polanco. So the subtitle of that book is Writing Mobility and Distance in the Making of the Society of Jesus. So a lot of my thinking about mobility has come out of thinking about that book and putting that book together and looking at the sort of the infrastructures and particularly the sort of paperwork around mobility in the early modern period, which in the volume Cebu Aslanian talks quite a bit about as well. And then the sort of the next larger project after that is following up on my piece in the book, which is on Agnes Day, where these sort of wax papally blessed wax medallions that were circulating in the early modern period on the sort of global trade and devotional objects more generally. So relics, I mean, relics people have looked at, but relics, rosary beads, there was a global rosary bead trade, hard to trace. Agnus Dei, but images, Roman images as well. And again, to see those, you know, see that as a cluster of objects that move together. And so it's more moving towards the sort of material culture side of mobility.
Wow, I'm looking forward to reading this work. I didn't expect the volume when I stumbled upon it. I wanted to read it, and so of course I wanted to talk to you about it. And I really enjoyed just thinking about these things in this new way and putting these ideas next to each other. So, listeners, once again, the book is Connected Mobilities in the Early Modern World: The Practice and Experience of Movement. Edited by Paul Nellis and Rosa Salzberg, who have so graciously joined me today to talk about it. So that's Amsterdam University Press. It's out now. You can follow the link on our website. And to the two of you, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a really lovely chat. All right.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jenna. That was lovely.
All right. Bye-bye.